And we are the Nonprofits. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the show. I'm your host, Jeff D. Our co-host is Dennis Lube.
Howdy.
Producer, Russell Glasser.
Hello.
And today, as our very special guest, we have Mary McManamy.
Hi, folks.
Mary was one of the founding co-hosts of this very audio show, what, 3 years ago? How long has it been since we started?
Been
three?
On a long
wow.
Time, huh?
3 years.
Man.
More than that, right? A little more?
That can't be right.
I think it'll be 4 years in January, right?
4! Yeah.
God.
So it's nearly 3.5.
Yeah. Wow.
I'm not so sure about that.
Yeah. Well,
I think it may be 2.5. But
well, no, regardless of when we started, today is July 3rd, 2004. We're broadcasting live. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Atheist Charities is an organization of helping hands to empower and educate those in need without imposing the chains of religion. You can find out more about them at www.atheistcharities.com. The National Atheist Ombuds is there to handle instances of slurs, defamation, or discrimination against atheists and other non-believers in the U.S. media. Report those to the National Atheist Ombuds by emailing ombuds@atheism.org. Send as many details as possible, who said it, what they said, on what station and what time and all that kind of stuff. Incidents will be reported to participating national and local non-theist organizations who will distribute press releases responding to the reported subject matter. The Heart of the Beholder film project still needs your support. Principal photography began in Los Angeles on June 7. There's still a chance to get in on the bandwagon, pledge money to support the film, and possibly make a little cash in return. For information about this film and how you can get involved, visit www.beholder.com. And now on to our special CFI events calendar. July 11th through 25th is Summer Session 2004 at CFI International, Amherst, New York. Applications are currently being accepted for CFI's summer offerings, available to audit or for State University of New York undergraduate credit through Empire State College. Information at centerforinquiry.net/summer04.html. On July 23 to 25th, CFI On Campus Summer Conference at CFI International, Amherst, New York. Want to get away this summer? Immerse yourself in a culture of learning. Network with free-thinking students like yourself. Find out new and innovative ways to promote your CFI on-campus group and have lots of fun at the same time. Then sign up for CFI's Summer Conference 2004. Info at campusfreethought.org/summerconference2004.htm.
Okay.
And that would be the announcements part of our show. Everything cool over there, Mr. Producer Man?
Yes.
Good.
Okay, let me hear this.
Awesome.
Regardless of when we started today. Everybody else is going to hear that now.
Yes.
Of course.
Cool. Okay, good.
Woohoo!
Yeah, there were little technical obstacles today. We have a new computer.
A new mega machine.
A new audio machine.
Yeah. A new monitor.
Nice.
Yeah.
Pretty.
I've got a brand new flat panel. It's only 17 inch.
Only.
The whole all setup free. Is new, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay, not those speakers, though.
No, the speakers are the same. I ordered the new computer without speakers.
Right.
And a new disc player.
Yeah.
Yes. So we've got
karaoke.
Right.
Who would like to start with some news? Dennis, would you please start us off with some news?
Some news.
Is anything happening in the world?
Oh, gosh. No, no changes in the world today.
Okay,
no,
thanks for listening. We'll see you.
Here's a weird one.
Oh, something is happening.
In Columbus, Ohio, this is apparently local to Ohio, several fundamentalist churches oppose a bill that would require members of the clergy to report child abuse, saying the legislation is an unnecessary intrusion into the separation of church and state.
What?
The bill, supported by mainstream churches, including Roman Catholics and Methodists, passed the Senate last year, but
one of those
stalled in a House
doesn't
committee.
Surprise me.
The pastors of independent Baptist churches and evangelical congregations around Ohio say the requirement raises privacy concerns about pastors' approach to counseling and even church teachings on corporal punishment. Ohio law already requires professionals such as doctors, lawyers, nurses, and teachers, social workers, and daycare employees to report suspected child abuse.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, what do you do about the, you know, the sanctity of confession, you know, and all that?
You throw it out the frickin' window is what
they're
you do.
They're breaking the law. You let people
that's
know.
That's completely stupid. It has never made any sense.
And why anybody would think it makes sense is beyond me.
Well, I think the only sense they have is that, well, they wouldn't confess it if there wasn't a safe place to confess it.
Well, but who cares?
But who cares? If it's safe, nothing happens. Woo!
So what function, then, does a confessional serve in our society? It's an outlet for those people that are feeling guilty but don't want to actually get in trouble for what they've done.
Right. It's an avoidance of responsibility, and that's what religion's all about.
Wow.
It's pretty amazing. It's nice that it's becoming more and more obvious, though.
One of them... sorry. Mm-hmm. I was going to say one news story I didn't get, but then it occurred to me that since I wasn't listening, that might be the very one you just read. But
Ohio, the bill to require pastors to report
suspected child abuse.
No, that wasn't it. I noticed on the infidels.org newswire this week that the Catholic Church was telling its constituents that they had to confess for voting for a pro-choice candidate.
Uh-huh.
Whoa. Whoa. They should lose their tax-exempt status right there.
Well, what I find really interesting, too, and ironic, is that if a priest or anyone were to tell their psychologist or psychotherapist or, you know, psychiatrist that they were molesting children, the therapist would then have a legal obligation to report it. And I think maybe the reason the church does not make or turn in pastors for doing this, perhaps.
So they can exchange phone numbers and stuff?
Well, maybe, yeah. But the other part of it would be that the church does not consider themselves therapists. And
I don't care.
I know. I'm just saying that.
I don't care.
If you're trying to understand their rationale, and I don't care either. I think it's absolutely wrong and fully immoral that they don't do this. But maybe that's...
No.
Part of the rationale.
I think another part of the rationale is they'd lose parishioners.
Yeah. Well,
oh, you betrayed me. You ratted me out to the cops.
Yeah. Well, would they lose parishioners? I mean, or would
a little boy.
Yeah.
That's right.
I know.
Well, what do you expect?
Would they lose them, though, or would they simply just
Look, I don't care.
Reacquire them in prison.
I'm not interested in the best interests of the church.
Right.
Yeah. I'm just not. I'm interested in the best interests of my society.
Mm-hmm.
The best interests of my society are if you're an authority figure who hears stuff like this.
You do something.
Report it. If you don't report it, then you're a schmuck.
And a criminal.
Yeah.
Well, a criminal after the law.
Yeah.
After that law. Ugh. No, and I will go on record. I strongly suspect that part of the reason they want to be able to keep this all secret is because there is an underground network in the Catholic Church about, you know, finding little boys and molesting them.
Mm-hmm.
There's an underground network. It's not just, you know, an occasional wrongdoer.
Mm-hmm.
No. There's a organized subculture of pedophilia in the Catholic
Girls
Church.
Girls, too, for that matter.
Well, all right.
Although we haven't
Fair
heard
enough.
About that as often.
Fair enough.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't want to be held accountable for that.
No. No.
I'm going to segue immediately into this other thing. I was in the bookstore the other day doing research on fairy tales and Celtic mythology.
Wow.
For a project that I can't talk about. And I went to my favorite bookstore, Borders Books, here in Austin, and they've been rearranging everything.
Hmm.
And I had a heck of a time locating the atheism books. They've always been sort of sprinkled at random through the comparative religion section.
Sometimes they end up in philosophy section.
Well, not at this one.
Not
at this bookstore. There was like a big, you know, bookshelf down one aisle.
By comparison, creationism books are often found in the science
section. Aye, aye,
so,
and let's not even get into Left Behind series.
So, yeah, it used to be there was, like, comparative religion, and then it would go into the Christianity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they have taken comparative religion, moved it, like, you know, across the aisle and down the way from the actual Christianity. And I don't know if this is going to last, but at least as a result of this first round of reorganization, all the atheism books are in one little clump right at the beginning. Well, at least it's at the beginning.
Okay. Right?
So I was looking at these things and, you know, bemoaning the fact that it's actually a pretty small number of books.
Let's start with an A. Yeah.
And, well...
Go ahead.
Not by title.
No.
And I get to the end of the atheist books, and then there's this book, which I believe the title was The Rise and Fall of Atheism.
Well, I didn't know we'd fallen.
Huh? I didn't know we'd ever risen. So I pick this book up, and it's some prick basically arguing that the golden age of atheism was in, like, 17, 1800s in Paris because the Catholic Church in France was being so abusive that it angered everybody, and it created this need for criticism.
Oh, I see. Okay. So atheists are happy when they live under an oppressive religious society.
Hang on. No, it's worse than that. So he argued that because that era was gone, and churches no longer do bad things, that now atheism serves no purpose.
Oh, no.
That's the theme of his entire book.
Why? Yeah.
I don't know where he's living.
Prick is an accurate observation. Damn.
It was infuriating. Infuriating.
Here's my premise that you are to accept without question.
Man.
Now, we'll work from there.
And I want, back on the subject of, you know, Celtic mythology and fairy tales and stuff,
yeah.
I need to go on record complaining about the influence of religion, of Christianity, in the recording of actual mythology.
Mm-hmm.
You ever try to read any of this old stuff? I mean, you run into Christianity injected into these older myths of other cultures.
Right.
Because the Christians come in, right?
They subsume the culture.
They happen to be the guys that have the written language and the monks writing down books and things. So they write the local tales down, and then they modify them and stick Christianity into it.
Yep.
So I'm like reading about the origins of Ireland. There's this book called The Book of Invasions.
Mm-hmm.
That's this heavily mythologized tale of waves of invaders coming and conquering Ireland and then getting defeated by the next wave. But it all starts with, like, the proto Ireland guy and his family living in the Middle East and palling around with Moses.
Wow.
And how, like, Moses predicted to them that they would someday, their descendants would live in a land free of snakes.
Weird.
Yeah, no contamination there.
Well,
that wasn't in the original stories before they'd ever heard of this Christianity.
Right. Well, as someone of Irish heritage, my dad, I never witnessed this firsthand, but my dad his grandfather was directly off the boat and escaped Ireland to get away from the potato famine. Uh-huh. And we have kitties, y'all.
There are
kittens in the room, and they're so sweet.
Our hearts are all melted all over the place right now.
You're having a lot of trouble staying on the subject today.
Look at those babies.
Well, did you finish your point?
No, I just sort of, on an aside note, complaining about Christianity.
Well, long story short, the Irish people as a culture have been very superstitious
mm-hmm.
for a long time.
Sure.
And that's just what my dad used to point out to me, is that his grandfather, they believed in a lot of things that were really way out there.
Uh-huh.
I mean, in terms, I don't know that they believed in fairies, but probably in, you know, things like, well, I was going to say pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, but no, I don't even think they believed in that. But
some stuff.
They believed, you know, probably if you step on a crack, you'll break your mother's back, that
sure.
kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, it just was very surprising to me, not having grown up around them.
I don't blame Christianity for that. I mean, I think primitive cultures are inherently superstitious because that's pretty much goes hand in hand with being primitive.
Uh-huh.
That's what it is to be primitive. You have a bunch of explanations for stuff that happen to not be correct.
Right. But don't you think religion can have a powerful influence on people who already think that way?
Yeah, but I think even worse, religion perpetuates that. It becomes a safe haven for continuing to cling to superstitions by, you know, making it all official and having a big organization and meeting every week to sit down together and have all the same superstitious beliefs together.
Yeah.
Right. Objectivity goes out the door.
There's no difference between organized religion and superstition, except for the organization part.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing.
Yeah. Well, and they were very Catholic, too, by the way.
Right. Yeah. A couple of notes from the chat room.
Yeah.
This Rise and Fall book is also available online. I'm waiting on the URL.
Is it?
Yes.
I think so, every atheist ought to read that and be appalled.
Wow. Right.
And not pay money for it.
They ought to read it online, yes. And the other thing is, jumping in on the conversation about where books are kept in the bookstores.
Yeah.
Somebody found a John Edwards book in the philosophy section.
Right.
The guy who talks to dead people.
Oh.
No.
Sneaking everywhere.
Oh, it's a Harun Yahya book.
Who?
Got it. Harun Yahya.
What?
He's like a Muslim fundamentalist who writes a bunch of creationist wacko stuff.
I don't think that's the same book.
Oh.
No,
this was some college professor guy
Weird.
Who was not a Muslim.
Well, then.
Really? So then there's two Rise and Fall of Atheism books?
I don't know.
I'm not surprised.
This one says The Fall of Atheism. I'll check on it.
This was Rise and Fall.
I love the title. I love the wishful thinking inherent in the title. It's great.
Yeah, this guy is just not aware of what's going on with atheism in our culture. Speaking of which,
yes.
I have here a one-page flyer from GAMPAC, the Godless Americans Political Action Committee.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
This was an effort founded in...
this is simply called The Fall of Atheism.
Yeah, that's something different. I'm sure, I mean, that guy's probably a prick too, but...
Yes, he is.
The GAMPAC was founded after the Godless Americans March on Washington.
Oh, yeah.
Organized by American atheists. They say, we are now positioned to begin educating and mobilizing our non-believer community for direct political action. Churches and other religious groups have been doing this for years. Now it's our turn. GAMPAC is working to mobilize tens of thousands of potential activists across the country, giving us a united front for or against specific legislative items. GAMPAC also will be putting candidates for local, state, and federal office on the hot seat concerning First Amendment issues and our civil rights. First, GAMPAC is endorsing Senator John Kerry for President of the United States.
Figured.
Yes, we know, Kerry is far from perfect. What major party candidate isn't? But the upcoming 2004 election is one of the most crucial our nation has faced in recent history. We must do everything we possibly can to stop George Bush and the religious right groups now ensconced in our nation's capital from further threatening and undermining our constitutional freedoms, especially the First Amendment. We simply cannot have four more years of Bush policies without the wall of separation between church and state crumbling around us. Second, and looking past the November election, GAMPAC is hosting a national One Nation Indivisible conference in the fall of 2005 in Washington, D.C., you may remember the famous Christian Coalition Road to Victory meetings held in the Capitol, which were an instant resource in were an important resource in mobilizing and training religious activists from across America. Ralph Reed, then executive director of the coalition, boasted of learning from other organizations, unions, civil rights movements, the women's groups, and others, and bringing that expertise to the evangelical and fundamentalist community. That's what we intend on doing for our community. So, updates about the weekend One Nation Indivisible Conference will be posted on the website www.godlessamericans.org. Organizations are welcome to reproduce this information in your respective newsletters and publications. I'm sure they have downloads you can print out from there, too.
Cool.
That's great.
What you can do to help. We urge you to contribute and get involved in the Kerry for President campaign any way you can. GAMPAC also needs your financial support so that we are ready for local, state, and national races in 2006. We look forward to having an active role in adding our voice to the public platform debates of both major parties in the 2008 elections. We can't have an impact, though, until we're able to deliver the votes. We welcome your financial support for the conference and to keep the GAMPAC growing. We also ask that you do everything possible to get out the vote. If the present trend continues, this election will be a close race. Every vote counts. In fact, isn't the evidence now indicating that Kerry has an edge? That's what I've heard.
I've heard a slight edge.
I've heard that in absolute numbers, more people like him than Bush slightly, but I've also seen maps where they break down what the districts are, and going by district, he still has a long way to go in like the middle, the middle and southern states.
Okay.
So I mean, like, you know, if every single person in California and New York, for instance, votes for Kerry, they're still going to go the same way as they did in 2000.
Yeah. Well. So how about that Fahrenheit 9/11, huh?
Great. Yeah.
I want to see it. I want Tim and I to see it. It's been sold out, which I'm very encouraged about that.
Yes.
Yeah. When I went to see it, I assume this was also the case with you. There were two rooms in the same theater where it was showing, and there were long lines to get to both of them.
Mm-hmm.
The theater was filled to capacity, and there was applause, like, instantly throughout the entire audience when it was over. Which is remarkable, because, you know, to applaud when, like, nobody is there to hear you except the audience. I mean, applauding at a film festival when the director is there is one thing, even if it's 10 or 15 minutes long.
Yeah.
Right.
But,
And applauding because you agree.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that struck me when I came out of the theater was that it made me proud to be doing what we're doing right here. Because even if we have an audience of just a few hundred, I feel like we're involved on a much smaller scale in what Michael Moore's doing. Because we covered a lot of the stuff as it happened. I mean, we had the Ashcroft song, which was...
we had our own version of his
song. Let the Constitution snore.
We played that clip which ends the movie of Bush saying, shame on
you. Okay.
Uh-huh. Oh, that was great. My God.
I want that embroidered on a pillow.
Fool me once.
So many bits in the movie where I was like, yep, we did that.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, that film really put the pieces together for me. And I'd been aware that I didn't agree with the invasion of Iraq. I'd been aware that there wasn't evidence of weapons of mass destruction. Mm-hmm. I'd been aware of Bush's connections to industry, to corporations that were benefiting from all this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Including Vice President Dick Cheney.
Including him. What I was not aware of was the history of Bush, I was not aware
Bush's
of
connection
the,
with the Saudis?
I'm getting there, man. The extent to which Saudi oil money, including Bin Laden family oil money, funded George Bush's business ventures. And, you know, if it had just been a matter of, investigative reporter uncovers that a lot of Saudi investment money had supported George Bush through his career, it'd be like, well, yeah, okay, sure. Politicians take money from people to further their own agendas. Mm-hmm. And of course, those people are going to have some influence, but that's, you know, I want to know specifically who is backing each candidate. I want to know that, but I don't necessarily reject a candidate just because there are people backing them.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, the case that this movie makes is that in addition to the business ties, which don't really explain anything, there was an ongoing effort to put a pipeline through Afghanistan.
An oil pipeline?
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And an ongoing, and now this effort to make money off of the rebuilding of Iraq and off of the oil coming out of Iraq. Mm-hmm. That goes back before the wars, right? I mean, they were already after that. But there's this bin Laden family connection. The movie makes an excellent case that apart from the mere money-grubbing aspects of it, that the reason why our nation has put on such a slipshod effort to capture Osama bin Laden,
mm-hmm.
and the reason why we haven't captured him,
mm-hmm.
is, and the reason why we went after Iraq, even though there's no evidence Iraq had anything to do with 9/11,
mm-hmm.
is because Bush and his cronies, with their financial ties to the bin Laden family, were facing potential political embarrassment when a member of the family that had backed them so strongly financially for the years was behind the murder of thousands of Americans.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted the spotlight off of Osama. They don't want Osama caught.
Mm-hmm.
That's the case that this movie makes.
So you think that maybe there won't be an October surprise that involves Osama?
I don't think they can afford an October surprise. I think if Osama gets caught, it, particularly now that Michael Moore's movie is out,
mm-hmm.
the Bush and his cronies are going to be facing a new round of questions about where their money has been coming from.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. But wait a minute, though. The bin Laden's family mm-hmm. has basically cut all ties with him. Now, I don't know if that goes... Bin Laden comes from a family of about 50 siblings, yeah. literally.
Yeah.
So,
you know,
I don't know if they all have cut ties.
But ties are not the issue.
Because mm-hmm.
nobody's claiming, and Michael Moore does not claim, that Bush had something to do with the attack on the World Trade
right.
Center.
Right.
That's
yeah,
not
that
the issue. The issue
great.
Is Bush
yeah.
and his cronies have been taking money from the Saudis for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Taking money, political money or what kind of?
Investment money.
Okay.
In their,
companies.
There's nothing in the film about political money.
Right.
But yeah, they've been personally benefiting from investment from Saudi Arabia,
mm-hmm.
which raises questions when we have somebody in the White House when we have a whole regime in the White House that has been backed by the Saudis for so long with so much money.
Right.
And Bush Sr. was, you know, still functioning as a liaison between some corporation and these high-ranking Saudi oil minister guys after he left the White House.
Ooh.
While he was receiving security briefings.
Right,
about
CIA. Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yes. Now, every president
Ooh.
Apparently has the right to view those security briefings,
uh-huh.
to be kept informed of what's going on with the country uh-huh. after they leave office. He was getting those briefings and working closely with the Saudis.
Yeah. And did you all see the U.S. Supreme Court's decision this week to not make Cheney reveal those records?
No.
Yes.
What?
Yeah. Basically, somebody in the federal government was asking for Cheney was subpoenaing those records of those deals.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was just in Saudi Arabia or
yeah.
partially in Saudi Arabia, but of his company. Starts with an H.
Halliburton.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And basically the Supreme Court said, no, he doesn't have to give you those records. And guess what? Scalia went hunting with Cheney, and Scalia refused to recuse himself from this case. There was a lot of pressure on him to say, I cannot be impartial on this matter, but he went ahead and was one of the supporters of Cheney in this matter.
Yeah. So anyway, it looks like, I can understand politicians, you know, getting money from people. That happens all the time. Right?
Yeah.
But when it's foreign people, rich foreign people,
mm-hmm.
in an area of the world that is, you know, a big security concern for the United States,
uh-huh.
I think that raises some fair questions.
Mm-hmm.
Sure does.
And it would be one thing to, you know, find yourself in that position and say, well, yeah, okay, so now I'm going to have to be president of the United States and have this history with these people, right? It's quite another thing to divert attention away from the actual culprit who killed thousands, ordered thousands of Americans to be killed in a terrorist attack, right, and make war on another country that had nothing to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
In order to divert attention, in addition to making money, right?
Right.
And they made, they're also benefiting financially from the war.
Yep.
Right? So there's two things, going on here, right? Greed and secrecy.
Mm-hmm. And I can see what you mean now by all the pieces of the puzzle kind of coming together.
Yeah, I mean, none of these things individually for me ever, that I were aware of, ever seemed to really cover it. And I was left with nothing but, okay, Bush must be an idiot.
Mm-hmm.
There's also, like, interviews with him from 20 years ago or however long it was before he was president where he's sitting talking candidly with a reporter about how, I get great access to the president, you know, and it gives you a lot of influence in the White House.
Mm.
Right, when his father was president.
Yeah.
And he's not talking like the Bush we're used to.
Mm-hmm.
He's talking like, you know, a guy who's got a working brain.
Hmm.
Which
That's
makes
odd.
It scarier, right?
Yeah, it does.
Is this an act?
Uh-huh.
Is it just, you know, so much public spotlight that he acts like a doof because he's embarrassed? Or, you know, or what? I don't know.
Well, Tim's theory is that he's quite bright, but he's just not very articulate. And so he comes across being a doofus.
He was fine in this.
Really?
Yeah, in this earlier interview.
Maybe he gets stage fright when he thinks he's in front of, you know, 290 million people.
I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't know. But it was very creepy.
Or he's trying to talk about something he knows nothing about, whereas when he was talking about his father.
Or he does know about it, and he's lying.
Yeah.
Or he's taking more drugs than he's willing to admit.
Or that.
Yeah.
anyway.
I think Bush is... How can I put this? Shrewd.
Mm-hmm.
He knows how to get stuff he wants, but he's not knowledgeable. So when he is called on to... I mean, I recall hearing an early episode of the O. Franken Factor where they went and found Bush's law school professor,
mm-hmm.
or business school professor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And... His recollection of Bush was basically that he was a smug frat boy who coasted through his school,
mm-hmm.
And didn't really care that much about working hard because he knew that his connections would get him through.
Right.
That's pretty much a reflection of what's going on.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
He's on vacation all the time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it may well be that when Bush is called on to talk about something that he doesn't know about, he stumbles,
mm-hmm.
and the reason he stumbles so much is because he just doesn't care to learn about things.
Right. Right. There's plenty of evidence of that.
Yeah.
So, now there have been criticisms of Moore's film. A lot. And, like, immediately setting aside all the ones from the biased right-wingers, who I think it is well established they will say anything. And have no shame.
Right.
There have been some criticisms from people who you would not consider as part of that camp.
Mm-hmm.
Mary,
you want to
tell us about that?
Sure. I read an article a couple of weeks ago from Christopher Hitchens, who, as I'm sure most of you are already aware, has written many books, many articles. He's a contributing writer for Vanity Fair.
He's also kind of a warmonger himself, isn't he?
Well... I don't know if I'd go as far to call him a warmonger, although I haven't seen many of his other position pieces on, for example, the first Iraq War to see, you know, what his thoughts were on that. But I do know that he wrote the book, The Missionary Position, about Mother Teresa and her, ilk. And it was not a flattering book by any stretch of the imagination. So he's not a conservative, right winger by any means. His article went into a lot of great detail, and I wish I had a copy of it here with me, but I would encourage everyone to read it, just for the perspective. His, I think, biggest criticism of Moore's film is that it was basically a spin piece. You know, for example, you could take a lot of these scenarios that are presented in the film and write your own dialogue around it to sort of make it fit your own idea of what Bush and his ilk were up to. Well, and that's a great oversimplification of his argument, but...
Of course it was. I mean, the movie... in fact, I've heard this comment made frequently, leveled against him, that it's claiming to be a documentary, but it's biased.
Yes.
So what?
Well, but wait.
I mean... Yeah. This is not like a documentary in the sense of, oh, let's film some things and show what we filmed. This is a documentary in the conventional sense, which is somebody putting together a bunch of stuff to make a point. This is an editorial in movie form.
Mm-hmm.
It's meant to be entertaining. It's meant to be one-sided.
And this one is. I remember his previous film, Bowling for Columbine, this exact same charge being leveled against him.
Huh.
And on that one, I completely didn't agree with the criticisms, right?
Mm-hmm.
They were saying things like, oh, well, the bits of different speeches by, Charlton Heston were strung together and interspersed with other commentary to make it look like Charlton Heston was saying something he wasn't.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And, you know, I looked at what it was he said in the individual isolated clips.
Uh-huh.
I don't get the point. I mean, the analogy I drew is, you know, if some guy, I didn't get the point. It seemed like the individual statements he made already made the case that the arrangement of those statements was nothing but trying to make a decent film, to make the point stronger,
mm-hmm.
but the point was already established
mm-hmm.
with from the individual pieces.
Right.
The analogy that I made was, if you're filming lions and you have a film of one lion chasing down and killing an antelope, And then you talk about how lions kill antelopes and then eat them. And then you show a different lion gnawing mm-hmm. on a different antelope.
Uh-huh.
Are you really vulnerable to criticisms that, well, that lion didn't kill that antelope? Maybe
right.
You haven't established that they did. In fact, we don't even know for sure that that's an antelope there that's being eaten. No.
Yep.
What matters is, is the point valid, right?
Yeah.
Is Charlton Heston, you know, as an icon of the gun lobby, does he say things that are insensitive of gun victims?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, yeah, he does. Does the gun lobby fight against restrictions that would make gun ownership safer for innocent bystanders? Well, yeah, they do. That's just a fact.
Mm-hmm.
And all this, what I seem to be seeing is that it's all nitpicking. It's as if we can show that individual details were not precisely as depicted, that casts doubt on the motives of the person making the film.
Mm-hmm.
And if there's doubt in the motives of the person making the film, then we don't have to pay any attention to it. What's in it?
Right.
That seems to be the strategy.
I think the lion antelope is an excellent analogy in that regard.
Yeah, I like
the
that.
Fact is, lions kill and eat antelopes.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter how you put the bits of film together to establish that. It's a fact.
Right.
And I have seen Bowling for Columbine, and I thought his interview with Heston was a brilliant piece of journalism. Just an interview. I mean, Heston said all this stuff.
Right.
You know, Moore didn't try to lead him
right.
in a certain direction.
Right.
You know, I just...
But they don't, you know, they don't criticize him on that.
No. Well, another thing they criticized him for was that oh, well, Heston was in the early stages of Alzheimer's, so here he was picking on him, you know, when he was vulnerable. But I know Alzheimer's. Both now, of my grandparents
if had Charlton
it,
Heston had sat there and spun off into some unrelated story about
it.
You know, when I was a lad, we used to have green peas for breakfast.
Right, that was not happening in that
That's
film.
Not what happened.
No, not at
that
all.
That is not what happened.
Not at all.
The guy knew that he was being put on the spot. And he got up and he walked away.
Yeah.
Now.
Yep.
Now, so anyway, I fought back against those people in, like, on alt-atheism that were going after Michael Moore about Bowling for Columbine, especially take into account, Michael Moore is an NRA member.
That's right.
Right? He's not against gun ownership.
That's right.
He goes to Canada and shows, here's gun ownership that doesn't lead to the kind of problems we have in the United States. Why? Mm-hmm. That was the point of his film, was asking that question, why?
You know, I kind of got the impression that he was an NRA member just for the sake of being able to say that he's an NRA member.
No, he showed his awards that he won when he was a kid shooting guns.
Oh, I forgot about that.
So I didn't agree with that assessment of Bowling for Columbine. I do agree with it when it's Fahrenheit 9/11.
Uh-huh.
I agree. Fahrenheit 9/11 is him going after Bush.
Yep.
Right?
He has a point. He has an objective that he's after. Didn't have an objective in Bowling for Columbine other than we've got all these gun deaths in the U.S. Why?
Uh-huh.
Right? Asking a question is not, you know, is not
right.
an agenda.
Mm-hmm.
He's got an agenda in Fahrenheit 9/11. But to me, the proper response to everybody that has some criticism of him is, fine, let's see Michael Moore get sued.
Mm-hmm. Or
if
being
he,
untruthful.
If he lied,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
If he lied, then he should be sued.
Mm-hmm.
And if he's sued, the lawsuit, presumably, will do more investigation than us armchair movie reviewers will ever be able to undertake, and that's when we'll find out something closer to whether his movie was on target or not.
Right.
Yeah.
Then.
From what I read, Michael Moore actually hired, like, a slew of fact checkers to go over the movie before it was released to make sure there was nothing he could be sued over.
Yeah, good grief. Michael Moore.
A team of lawyers.
Yeah. Al Franken in Lies and the Lying Liars Who Tell Them. Came right out and called people liars.
Uh-huh.
He said, you are a liar.
Uh-huh.
That's libelous.
Yeah.
If false.
Yeah.
Has he been sued for
not
the
yet.
Only lawsuit against him was to try to stop the title of the book.
Oh, that's right.
Because
Limbaugh,
Fox did
no,
not.
That was before.
It was
book after. Never mind.
Fair and Balanced.
Fair and Balanced subtitle.
News,
Fox tried to claim it was a
specifically Bill
violation.
O'Reilly.
Right.
Yeah.
That was it. That was their only legal defense.
Yeah.
So those people who want to establish that we don't have to take these things seriously by nitpicking little details and missing the point, right?
Well,
by claiming that, you know, artistic license equals falsity, no matter how accurate the details being artistically presented are,
mm-hmm.
those people need to shut up.
Well, I just thought of another criticism that Hitchens had, and it was related to what Russell just mentioned about the media. Like, somebody can sue him if they find something inaccurate, and he had a lot of fact checkers.
Uh-huh.
Well, one of Hitchens' criticisms is, if people try to criticize Michael Moore, apparently he's got a lot of PR people around him and a lot of spokespeople who are basically kind of doing the same thing that the Bush administration has done by not allowing access to this information.
Bullshit. He's a reporter. The Michael Moore in this film was a reporter, right?
Mm-hmm.
He got the information.
Mm-hmm.
Other people can independently get the same information. Mm-hmm. They don't need Michael Moore to hand
it
to them.
Well, I think what he meant was that Michael Moore is circling the wagons, But again, I find that hard to believe.
If you're going after this giant political financial machine,
the sitting president, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
of course you would have circled the wagons.
I just thought
of
that.
Of course you would.
But anyway,
So.
Wow.
So after Amanda and I saw Fahrenheit 9/11, they had flyers at the theater when we went.
Oh yeah.
One of them was inviting people to participate in Turn Up the Heat, a national town meeting, the following Monday. That was Monday. That was June 28. And that happened to be the night that we have gaming here at the Glasser Studios.
That's right.
And Russell was kind enough to set that up, and then I was rude enough to show up really, really late and only catch the last 5 minutes of it. Just as it was ending. But it was like sort of lame and sort of cool at the same time. It was lame in the sense that it's not a town hall meeting when it's, you know, two people with a microphone talking to everybody that's listening, right? Uh-huh. That's a, you know.
Let me describe the page from a technical standpoint.
Okay, go ahead.
You had one frame at the top where they opened a real player stream where those guys could talk to you. But the rest of the
those
stream,
guys being Michael Moore and a guy from MoveOn.org who's interviewing him.
Yeah, that's right. And the rest of the screen was taken up by a large, I guess it was a Shockwave application, which showed a map of the United States. And when you open up the stream, you have to register. So you have to say where you're from and how many people are at your event listening to the same stream. And then what was really cool was that this Shockwave map of the United States would pop up little circles all over the map.
Yeah, they would say something like, okay, next week we're going to have a new round of meetings for people to organize, to take phone lists and phone people to encourage them to register to vote and vote for Kerry, right? And you'd get a little pop-up would say, you know, would appear for you to say what percentage of the people at my group are agreeing to host one of those events next week. And then they'd do it again, and how many people in my group are voting to attend one of those next week.
And these things would show up in real time. I mean, they would highlight some people's answers. Like, they would ask, like, short answer questions, and people would type in their answers, and you would see, oh, like, you know, John from Maryland.
Oh, I missed that part.
Blah, blah, blah.
I wish I'd seen that.
Oh, you didn't see that.
That must have been earlier than
I mean, first of all, they had...
That's not so lame.
They had little circles showing the density of how many people are listening in which places. Lots of people.
Right, so the bigger the circle, the more people.
Cool.
But then also when they did a poll, then there'd be... It would be a circle that was a pie chart. And the different colors...
In the different counties.
Oh, wow.
Right.
So,
it was
so
really
was neat.
Yeah, the technology shows huge promise for organizing grassroots support like that. So
I'm really terrified that Bush is going to win again. I really am. I just don't.
What
see,
are you doing about it?
Well, nothing yet.
He's appearing on this show.
I gave money to Kerry.
You did?
Yeah.
That's good. I think I'll do that too. I just don't really like Kerry, but he's better than the alternative.
Right. Anything is better than the alternative. The chair I'm sitting in is a better alternative.
Yeah. Isn't that a sad statement?
I don't understand the objection to Kerry. Objections to Kerry, by the way. What is the problem?
Well, I just don't really see him as a very good leader.
He's not as lovable as Bill Clinton.
No, he's not. That's a good point. Yeah, he's not.
Lovable,
and
Clinton got so much love.
Yeah.
I would rather have somebody who's more of a hard ass.
Well,
he did.
But he's not
actually
a hard ass.
I mean, the fact is, despite all the noise you hear about how he was the worst person in the world, more people liked him than Reagan.
Yeah.
Hmm. Right. That's good.
Hmm. Yeah. I guess some people came to my door about a month or two ago. Probably campaigning for Kerry. You know, who are you going to vote for in the White House? And I made a point of saying anything but Bush.
Yeah.
Doesn't have to be a person.
Inanimate objects are good, too.
Yeah.
Well, and it's funny, too, because I really want to talk to those people out there that are going to vote for Nader. I voted for Nader last time. But I would never do that again, even though I don't think it really makes a difference in Texas. I mean, you know, I just don't think it hurts Kerry that much in Texas, because I think Bush is going to carry Texas no matter what. But this time, I think it's just absolutely dangerous to vote for Nader.
The principle is good, and we appreciate
it.
But the results are disastrous.
Stop it.
I wish I had printed that story about Nader that I was going to, about how several Republicans around the country have been going around with petitions trying to get Nader on the ballot, pretending to be Democrat groups.
Right. It's the best destructive tactic they could do.
Hmm.
They have no shame. They'll stop at nothing, and they'll say anything.
Yeah, they admitted it. They said, yep, we're doing this to help Bush, but they still go out there with the petitions and collect signatures.
It's awful.
God, they're filthy.
It's gotten so bad that when Amanda and I were standing in line waiting for Fahrenheit 9/11, and there was a guy with a handful of voter registration cards going up and down the line, offering them to people. And then, when they were filled out, taking them back and saying he would mail them in.
Mm-hmm.
I was suspicious.
Yuck.
Because, man, if you want to make sure that Fahrenheit 9/11 has no impact, take all the people that it encourages to vote and convince them they've already registered.
Ooh.
Right. How?
Ew.
So, if anybody has had their voter registration taken out of their hands like that, anybody listening to me, and please advise everyone you know, if you don't have a voter registration card in your hand a few days before the deadline, go down and do it again yourself manually. Don't trust
and
that some other guy sent it in for you.
If you didn't stick it in the mailbox with your own hand,
do
something about it. Yeah.
So
creepy.
I have here staying. Staying on topic of the bad reviews of Fahrenheit 9/11.
Oh yeah, okay.
I managed to pull a bad review right off the website that is run by James Dobson's Focus on the Family.
No.
Oh boy,
he
didn't like the film.
I can't imagine that.
It's called PluggedInOnline.com, and I was a little confused about that, but it's a direct link from family.org that says Our Movie Reviews.
Oh, boy.
So it's kind of a stealth fundamentalist's site, I think.
How many stars?
I don't think they do stars, but my one favorite line in this review was... Moore devotes several more minutes of film to Attorney General John Ashcroft singing a patriotic song. Why? It can't be because his singing is bad.
Not several more minutes. I'd be surprised if there was more than 1 minute of that song.
Yes. 1 minute is plenty, though.
I'd be surprised if there was even
there
that much.
There were audible groans.
Yes.
In the theater.
So, what is their suspicion about that?
Maybe it's because Moore considers him goofy or stupid and assumes we all think the same.
No, we consider him dangerous.
Yeah.
He makes my mighty anus sore.
By the way, you can still download clips of Jeff singing that same song with variations at our site, atheist-community.org/radio show. Yes, you can.
Let the Constitution snore.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they come up with a whole bunch of those other nitpicky criticisms like you mentioned.
Yeah, if you've got something to say about Moore's film that shows that he's a liar, then by all means, let's hear it.
Yeah, we want to know.
Mm-hmm.
Here's another segment they don't like. What should offend everyone is Moore's letting the camera linger interminably on a mother in deep grief over the loss of her son in Iraq. One quickly senses that he cares less about the mother than the point he wants to make. She and her grief are simply means to his end.
Not to mention that some right-wing bitch walked up to this mother who had stopped to look at a anti-war protest display in Washington, D.C. and was yelling, "This is all fake! It's all just
staged.
A put-on! It's staged!"
Oh,
if you want to talk about insensitivity, there's, you know...
Now, you realize, of course, that there was a camera trained on the whole scene while she was saying this, so I can understand almost how she might think that.
The point is, she went ahead and said it.
Yeah.
No matter what she thought.
To someone who's
son had been killed in the
right.
war.
Yeah. Right. Mm. So if there's anybody who cares more about making their point than they care about other people's feelings, it would be that lady. Mm-hmm. You know, the woman who the camera lingered on while she was weeping over the death of her son, that woman appeared throughout his film, long segments of her talking about her life. Okay? She was involved in creating the message in this film.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Her grief is part of that message.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah, she started out as...
It was damn effective filmmaking,
and if she felt bad about it, I'd like to hear from her.
And it seemed like she started out as the right-wing...
Yes.
...person.
Yes.
But ended up completely different.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Well, mm-hmm. she described herself when you first meet her as a conservative Democrat who objected to war protests.
Okay.
Right.
And by that point of the film, she's going, you know... Talking about the woman that accosted her, saying it was all staged.
And now she gets it.
She said, but she says, people are so insensitive, but they don't understand. I thought I understood, but I didn't understand. Now I understand. Mm. After her son was killed. Yeah. So, wow. What?
Heaven forbid you should show grief.
Oh, amazing.
Boy.
And Texas Monthly has...
It's like the pricks that were upset when people started asking to be able to photograph the coffins coming back from Iraq.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, it's so insensitive to want to photograph the coffins. Oh, fuck you.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, the reason to photograph them is to bring that information... And that opportunity for grief to the rest of the general public.
That's right. They didn't say that during the first Iraq War either. I didn't hear that.
Yeah.
Well, and also, in Texas Monthly, the current issue has letters from troops who were killed.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the letters were written maybe just a few weeks before they were killed in combat or in active duty. And it's extremely powerful. And to think that these messages or these real-world glimpses into what people were thinking while they're in the midst of this battle, to think that that would be suppressed or censored to me is just ludicrous. I don't understand why anybody would want to just shut people up about what they really experienced.
Well, because religion, like the Bush administration, or should I say the Bush administration, like religion, is focused on trying to convince people they're living in happy puppy candy land where nothing is wrong.
Right. Hence the response to the photos of the torture in Iraq.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Oh, well,
they were just
solution to that?
Off steam.
No cameras.
Yeah.
But they also tried to say that it wasn't a big deal.
Uh-huh.
It was a good thing. Even.
Yep.
Yeah. Well,
just get rid of the cameras. That'll solve the problem.
There's an indication that things are changing. Support of First Amendment freedoms back to pre-9/11 levels, new survey shows.
Uh-huh.
Everybody remember after 9/11 there was a survey where people were asked, do you think that in America we have enough freedoms or not enough freedoms? Enough freedoms or too many freedoms? And like half of the people responded they thought that they had too many freedoms.
Wow.
Yeah.
What?
Does everybody remember this? You don't remember
that?
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Yeah. Ugh. Oh, yeah.
Too many.
Too many.
Too many. We aren't safe.
No.
Part of this story, Americans' support for the First Amendment freedoms, deeply shaken by the terrorist attacks of September 11, continues to rebound and is back at pre-9/11 levels, according to the annual State of the First Amendment Survey, conducted by the First Amendment Center in collaboration with American Journalism Review magazine. The 2004 survey found that just 30% of those surveyed agreed with the statement, "The First Amendment goes too far in the rights it guarantees." That was the thing. With 65% disagreeing. The nation was split evenly, 49% to 49%, on that same question just 2 years ago, in the survey immediately following the 9/11 attacks. Huh. Despite the ongoing war on terrorism worldwide and regular warnings from authorities about domestic attacks, a significant majority of Americans continue to support a free and open society, said Gene Holsinski, acting director of the First Amendment Center. Still, having about 1 in 3 Americans say they have too much freedom is still a disturbing figure.
Mm-hmm. Sure is. But don't you think...
I can't imagine answering that way. Well, go ahead.
Well, don't you think that it kind of all harkens back to Bowling for Columbine? I mean, another tenet of that film was people are scared. Mm-hmm. And when you're scared, you want to just crawl up into your little shell and buy a gun.
You know, right.
And not leave the house.
And all you can do is imagine what other people are doing in the privacy of their homes and stuff. Oh, they could be amassing arsenals. And
getting ready to blow up buildings. And all these people from Mexico coming here and taking my job and all the jobs going to India. And I mean, whatever. People are just really terrified of
fear.
Of being... part of the rest of the world.
So we have to control that stuff. We have too many freedoms. Right.
Yeah. Right, exactly. Yeah, that whole thing was, you know, the homeland security. You know.
Fatherland security?
Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh, fatherland.
Really? I mean, who did not see it that way when that thing came down? You know?
I can't imagine anybody voting for the damn thing, especially with a name like that.
But that was the state of the country at the time.
Yeah.
People were willing to give up a little bit of freedom in order for an illusion of a lot more security.
Uh-huh.
An
illusion.
An illusion, because I'd like to bring up another great scene from Fahrenheit.
Washington State? That segment?
Where the guy who was guarding the border...
Yeah, in Washington State.
The one guy in Washington, D.C., who doesn't have any idea what to do if terrorists actually attack, and has a phone that usually doesn't work.
Right.
And is part-time. He gets to patrol, and if he personally sees anything that he knows is suspicious, why then...
Along, like, a 10-mile stretch of coastline or something like that.
Yeah.
Then he can decide to do something. Yeah.
Budget cuts. It's like, God, what the...
So, interesting.
And this was a post-9/11 interview with this guard?
Oh, yeah.
Security guy?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
he said, nobody ever sent me a manual on how to fight terrorism.
Yeah, it's a result.
If they sent me one, I'd read it.
Yeah.
But they haven't sent me one.
Wow.
It's a result of all this terrorist stuff.
On the one hand, we're being told, oh, there's a horrible terrorist threat and we've got to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got to set up these institutions that will weaken our personal freedoms. But when it comes to, like, funding for law enforcement,
mm-hmm.
right? Any funding of things that are actually beneficial?
Mm-hmm.
These are Republicans,
yeah.
right? They don't like that kind of thing. They don't want the government paying for hardly anything.
And now with the war in Iraq, think about all the money that's being spent. I mean, there's a bill right now that is requesting $1 trillion more dollars. Just not to fight terrorism. This is just to fund the war.
And almost more importantly, think where that war funding is actually going. It's going into the pockets of defense contractors.
Yep. Oh, and
like Halliburton.
Thank you for mentioning that, because the other, I should restate what I just said.
And who would benefit from that?
Yeah.
Well, Bush and his cronies.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Cheney.
Yep. And it's actually not just going to fight the war, but it's over a 10-year period. And it's also going to new technology, such as Star Wars type things. I mean, and I don't know that anything has been released officially about what these kind of technologies would be, but it has nothing to do with terrorism. It has nothing at all to do with that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well.
Is there anything cheerful?
I think there is. I think there's a lot cheerful.
Okay,
I think the very
good.
Fact that Fahrenheit 9/11 is out and doing extraordinarily well
and selling out,
that's cheerful.
On a per theater basis,
yep.
It's up there with Spider-Man.
Right.
Yeah.
As one of the, you know, record-breaking...
Well, I don't know if that's what I've heard. What I've heard is that it's, like, the best selling documentary ever.
Yeah, he's talking about per theater. No, at the theaters where though. It's showing, if you compare the number of people who see Spider-Man.
Yeah, when you have a movie that's selling out every single time.
I see.
Boy, the Hollywood takes notice of those numbers, too.
Yep.
Even though it's only showing on 800 and some odd screens.
But maybe they'll release it more. It's making a killing. Maybe they'll release it more.
Yeah.
Make more money.
Apparently that may be the intent. So. Very cool.
I want to commend the Weinstein brothers of Miramax for buying the film and distributing it. Yay! Thank you.
I would have hoped that Disney was feeling regretful, but I saw an interview with some bigwig at Disney, and they said, nope, you know, it's making a lot of money, but it would be a drop in the bucket at Disney, and we don't feel bad because we probably would have lost more loyal people than we would have gotten.
Yeah.
So that's their spin.
Yeah, because so many right-wingers are huge Disney fans.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
These are the same assholes who have been, you know, screaming about Disney because they recognize domestic partners.
Right.
Yeah.
And also, Disney and ABC are partners, and ABC owns the stations that runs Rush Limbaugh, including in Iraq.
Ew!
Speaking of Iraq, isn't there something going on over in Iraq? What a great segue.
Here's something. Yeah. Let's see if I can find it. Yeah, here it is. Baghdad, June 28th. This is old, but, you know.
So we handed control back over to the Iraqis, right?
Yes, we did.
And now everything's peachy keen.
Yeah, Iraq's interim president, Ghazi al-Yawar, and his prime minister, Iyad Alawi, were sworn in Monday, hours after a U.S.-led coalition handed over powers. That's great. Except... Alawi vowed to strike with an iron fist at the atheists and criminals who are targeting the people of Iraq and who are being supported by the remnants of Saddam's regime and his sons Uday Qusay, who went to hell.
Wait a minute, I'm hearing Cartman's mom. What? I mean,
what? First, it's nice to know they're so rational assume that Uday and Qusay went to hell. But
look on the bright side, at least they acknowledge that atheists and criminals are two separate groups.
Yes.
They both deserve to die.
I don't like being categorized with criminals.
But why?
Who are targeting people in Iraq?
You're talking
about
people who are terrorist insurgents in your nation. Right?
Yeah.
Once you've said criminals, aren't you done?
You're done.
Yeah.
Why does the word atheist need to be there?
Because now, we don't believe in God, whether it be Allah or...
Is not believing in God a...
indication that you're targeting the people of Iraq.
Yeah, is that an attack on the people of Iraq?
Yes.
Wow.
I guess so.
Just ask the fundamentalists right here in America.
Yep.
They'll tell you that...
Well, there you go.
You're with us or against us.
Yeah.
I'll bet you they'll tell you that criminals are people who do bad things against society, and atheists do things that piss off God, which causes him to do bad things against society.
Yeah.
Yep.
It sort of makes sense.
I'm sure they believe the same thing over there.
Well,
get the atheists and keep God happy.
So much for religious freedom under this new regime.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, as we're talking about new regimes, it's also chronicled in Fahrenheit 9/11, the Hamid Karzai, the guy put in charge of Afghanistan by us.
Yeah.
You know who he was?
Who?
He was an advisor to a company that Bush and his cronies were involved in that stood to benefit financially from exploiting Afghanistan after the war.
Well, good for
He's not just some local guy. Not just some local guy that the people there like and respect, and you put him in charge because they'll listen to him. No. He's in the pocket of the corporations that
it's like the Republicans have never heard of the phrase conflict of interest.
Right. Or ethics.
Yeah.
They've never heard of it.
God. Well, I mean, let's not forget about the last guy who got canned, Ahmed Chalabi, who, was exiled from Iraq when he was, like, a little kid and hadn't been back there ever and was... was being chosen because he was a business friend of Bush's.
And then
he got scrapped because it turned out that he was turning right around and selling confidential information that he was getting from his relationship with Bush to Iran.
As if the Iraqis needed another reason to resent us being there.
Yeah.
Right. But you're right, Dennis. They have no sense of ethics. They think that the normal rules don't apply to them somehow.
It has to be. I mean, it's a campaign of this kind of crap.
Man. Wait, I thought we were on the good news now.
I mean, fool me once, and then, I forget.
Good news, once again, support of the First Amendment, back to pre-9/11 levels, right? Good news.
Yeah.
I got good news.
Yeah? Let's hear some good news.
The fundamentalists are still trying to move out of the country.
Yay!
But not actually out of the country. They're just trying to move to one state and say that it's a different country.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah. We've been covering this story.
Right. We did this on the last show. Texas group wants conservative Christians to move to South Carolina. It's officially South Carolina. 12,000 at a time to form a biblically inspired government and secede from the United States.
More power to them.
What if you're an atheist in South Carolina?
Move out.
We'll take you. We'll take you. We love
Mary,
you.
Mary, let me just pose a scenario for you.
Uh-huh.
Okay? The fundamentalist Christians flock to South Carolina.
It turns into fundamentalia.
It becomes fundamentalist heaven.
Yeah.
And they take over the government of South Carolina.
Uh-huh.
Right? And all their friends move down there, and all the fundamentalists are all concentrated in this one little state.
Yeah.
And then they say, now we're not part of the United States anymore. What happens next?
Oh.
Well,
what is the thing that will happen next?
They have to pay taxes, or they have to fund themselves. Like, they don't get any government support.
It's treason.
What, is the United States going to let them go?
No.
What happened last time some states decided they weren't part of the United States anymore?
Oh, yeah, we went to war. No.
Well,
so I'm, please, all fundamentalists listening to the show, both of you, please move to South Carolina.
Wait,
take it over.
I've got a car. I'll happily drive you there.
Yes, let's fund them.
Wait, but you're saying we'll have another civil war. That's not a good thing.
Wait a minute. The first civil war was about...
Who's going to lose, Mary?
Civil war was fought between half the United States and the other half.
Frankly,
this would be 49 states against one.
Frankly, I don't even think there should be... I don't think there should be any sort of war response or anything. I say, fine.
Let them.
You're in South Carolina. Great.
Bye-bye.
It immediately doubles the IQ of the rest of the United States.
And then there's my plan from a previous show, which is build a wall around them.
Yeah.
Just wall off South Carolina.
They can't freely trade with us. All tariff laws would apply. So they'd have to become pretty much self-sufficient, except pay a huge amount to import and export. Mostly import.
Their God would help them survive.
They confidently produce most of the stuff that they take from
I say
now.
Go for it.
Yeah, I say go for it.
Enjoy.
We'll have another Israel.
No, we won't.
Why?
Because we'll crush them in a civil war.
What makes you think the people in South Carolina who are not fundamentalists don't want to move? They're going to be...
Well,
they will after the war starts.
The thing is, you don't have a right as a citizen not to have a bunch of people you disagree with move in and take over your local government.
Right.
You don't have that right. So I think it's a tragedy, but it'll be a tragedy caused by these fundamentalist wackos. But then we'll have them all in one nice, confined little place where we can then move in with our tanks. I mean, I'm sorry.
No, I say let them
am
let
I a war
perish.
Now?
Yes, I say let them.
I am.
I say let them perish in their own little Stone Age, Bronze Age morass that they would create for themselves.
No,
boy, it would go down.
But you know what
that.
Comes out of those little Stone Age morasses?
What?
Terrorists.
Yeah
Afghanistan
right.
was.
Oh
stone
boy, you're right.
Now I think it's important that this happen in one of our states, so that when they try to secede, we have a justification for going in there and blowing the hell out of them. Okay. Rather than letting them sit and fester,
per se,
sit and fester, and then start sending their terrorists out to screw with us.
Right.
Move them all in there. Maybe the wall would be a good idea. I'm now thinking just, you know, the instant they try to succeed. Instant they try to secede, destroy them.
Why would you keep them from seceding? Why would you want to?
Because then they're stealing American territory. It's the same justification you ever have.
Good point.
For people seceding.
Yeah,
I mean, there are resources there.
I have
there.
To agree with
those
that.
Those are resources that are part of the United States.
That's right. And they'd be stealing those.
I don't think it would be a good idea to let it turn into a little Afghanistan.
Right.
Yeah.
Right on our own continent.
Right.
That'd be bad and dangerous for us.
Until they did something, but we can't attack them on that would be like attacking Iraq by claiming they have weapons of mass destruction.
No. They've announced that they want to take it over in order to secede. So we let them move in there. As soon as they get to the point where they vote to secede, now they are in violation of the rules by which the United States operates. We destroy
true.
Them.
Okay.
Well, I've got to say one other thing about that, and that is read Under the Banner of Heaven. I'm only in the third chapter of this book, but it's about polygamy.
Uh-huh.
And it's about the wacko polygamists who are now in...
Don't be dissing on polygamy in general.
No, I'm not dissing
polygamy gets a bad rap because Mormons do it.
No, it's because children are involved. That's the difference.
Okay, but that's not polygamy. Polygamy has multiple wives. It says nothing about the age of the people are.
That's true.
Just trying to be fair.
Yeah. Well, I guess, though, in their mind, at least everybody I've read about in this book, which is not all polygamists, certainly, but the Mormons who are doing this...
Oh, yeah.
...have part of it is having sex with kids. And that's just...
Right,
so,
but that's...
So wrong.
But that's pedophilia. That's not polygamy.
Yeah.
Speaking of which... Thank you for segueing beautifully into this one. You didn't even know I had this story.
I guess you guys didn't want to hear anything but the first paragraph of this story.
Oh, well, okay, fine. We'll get to the Mormons in a second.
But
yeah,
if you want to find out more, how about you guys all go to ChristianExodus.org.
They have a website?
Can we donate money?
It's
run by Corey Burnell, who's a 28-year-old living in Tyler, Texas. Oh. And I say, get out of here, Corey, and go to South Carolina.
Help him rent
why is
buses.
He not already there?
Yeah.
That's what I want to know. Shouldn't he be first?
You'd think.
Mormon church leader arrested in internet sex sting.
Oh, well.
Idaho. I think this is probably the first Idaho news story we've ever done.
Yeah, could be.
Let's shout out to all our atheist friends in Idaho.
Hey.
Oh, my goodness.
Dude.
I'm sorry, but I've been looking through this story just now.
Russell, now I've started mine.
I'm sorry, but you have to hear this.
All right, go ahead.
It addresses
your
concerns.
We'll be back to Idaho in a second.
Burnell said people of all faiths, as well as atheists and agnostics, would be free to live in the new state.
Uh-huh.
His movement would have no adverse effect on people already living in South Carolina.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Right, uh-huh, yeah. And?
His critics disagree.
me among them.
If you read their website, there's a lot of hate, particularly directed against gays, said University of South Carolina historian Dan
Carter. Oh, I noticed
Dan
gays
Carter.
Were not among the people that it would not be bad for.
Well, that's not a faith.
Oh, I see.
Anyway, you can go on now.
Idaho.
One of the 10 men arrested for enticing a child over the internet is a leader of the Mormon Church.
All right.
51-year-old Clayton Hildreth is a stake president in Butte, Montana. I don't know what a stake president is.
No idea.
Some weird bullshit.
Clayton faces federal charges after coming to Boise from Montana to meet up with someone he thought was a 14-year-old girl.
Ew.
He's now out of jail on $50,000 bond.
Nice, he's rich.
Yuck.
Oh, boy.
Well...
Now, the reason I make a stink about the polygamy thing, right, is polygamy is... the word itself, all it implies, is this particular lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that those people saying that if we legalize gay marriage, we're going to be moving toward legalizing things like polygamy.
Right.
I think they're right. I think when they then say we're going to go legalize things like bestiality... I think they're insane.
Mm-hmm.
But if we're just talking about how adults organize themselves,
yeah,
lifestyle-wise, well,
yeah, and the difference,
that I think the government has no business stopping anybody from living however they want.
But here's the tricky,
when it's adults,
right? But here's the tricky thing:
yeah,
is that in the Mormon community, in this that's described in this book, the adults are marrying off the 13-year-old.
Right. That is not polygamy, right?
Well, I agree.
Right.
But that's
the only point I'm making.
But under the law,
yeah,
they're free to do that, I think. You know, it's not illegal to marry a 13-year-old girl.
Whoa.
Ah, I see what you're saying.
Whoa.
So you're talking, but then that issue then is age of consent.
Yeah.
Right?
Wow.
Yeah.
I've heard it was that low. Well, I don't know if this is true anymore or if it was even true when I heard it. I heard it was that low in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason.
Yeah. Large Amish community, but I don't know if they marry that young. Maybe.
I really doubt the Amish have any influence over the laws of Pennsylvania.
Probably not.
So anyway.
I got one here.
Mm.
Seven officials at Florida private school arrested for defrauding voucher program.
Really?
Yeah. It couldn't be that was
I thought the whole reason for vouchers was so that we would know that good church going Bible believing Christians would be in charge of the money necessary to educate our children.
Well, here's how they do it. A private school took state voucher money for 23 disabled children who did not attend classes, leading to the arrest of seven school officials. Faith Christian Academy.
Faith Christian Academy.
In Bartow also defrauded a voucher program in which corporations receive tax credits for providing scholarships meant for poor children who attend private schools, investigators said. In addition, officials at the Central Florida school also took money from a federal free lunch program for more students than actually attended the school. In all, school officials defrauded the state and others out of more than $200,000, using some of it to purchase cars and real estate.
What is it about Christians that make them think that the rules don't apply to them?
They have a higher power that they have.
We had a guy come into
God
the
told him to defraud the
we
school.
We had a guy come into the Ask an Atheist email list that we run and start spamming us with these giant 8-10-page-long tirades, like, you know, those pithy stories of how they became Christians and miracles and crap. And they were asked to stop. And he said, "You should chill out. I thought Christians were welcome in this group." Well, yeah, Christians are welcome. It's called Ask an Atheist. You're welcome to come here and ask questions of atheists, not post gigantic stories. Right?
Right.
They have this attitude, like, you know, that welcome, that when they're welcome, that means there's no restrictions at all.
Right.
And if there are any restrictions, then it's persecution.
Because they're used to being Christian.
Well,
persecution.
Folks, thanks for listening. We've enjoyed doing the show once again. Mary, thanks for stopping by.
Thank
it was
you
a,
for having me.
It was a
cool.
pleasant surprise.
Always fun to persecute Christians.
We're not.
We're saying things. Ooh!
And we will we'll be here again in 2 weeks, right?
Yeah.
Right? Right?
Computer's willing.
Are we going to have our technical issues solved by then?
You know, they were solved this week, just 15 minutes late.
as usual, Russell, you impress the heck out of me with, you know, problems come up that, you know, then you solve them, and that's the good thing.
You pull the rabbit out of the hat.
Thanks once also to Atheist Network for hosting our show. Everybody, go to the Atheist Network site, enjoy their fine things, pay to listen to,
and go to ChristianExodus.org and donate money to them too.
And yeah, donate money to the effort to move all Christians to South Carolina.
Please.
We'll see you in 2 weeks. Bye bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye
bye. Bye.